Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Russell Johnson will be here as always. In fact, he is here right now. You'll hear from Russell in a little bit. You'll also hear Russell's interview with Sean Williams, recruiting analyst with Rivals.com. So the two of them both cover recruiting, so they will probably, I'm guessing, talk about recruiting here on this podcast, which we will get to momentarily. First, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. A lot of you have already done this. Billy's Pecans is an absolute perfect choice to handle all of your corporate gifting. It's right there in Crenshaw, Mississippi. It's billyspecans.com, B-I-L-L-I-E-S, pecans.com. At Billy's Pecans, they know the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, or tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, they'll handle everything with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point you simply cannot choose wrong. You can give the assorted gift bags, the best-selling party trio, or you can go with the little sweeter choice and do the pecans and chocolate, or you can mix it up. Whatever you feel like doing, individual orders, just whatever you feel like doing. It's a great corporate gift. It's a great gift for a friend. It's a great thank you. Any of that. Billyspecans.com. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans and more, and it couldn't be any more satisfying. Again, billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast is brought to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. It's truly that easy. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. You just get a great quote on a Ford of your choice, and then it's up to you. You can shop your quote around, or you can let Corey do for you what he's done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a brand new Ford, great service after the sale, delivery options, all of those things without wanting to punch somebody at a dealership, which is what usually happens with me. I end up wanting to punch somebody in a dealership. Anyway, I'll make it even better. Tell Corey at the end of your deal, right before you sign all the paperwork, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. That's $500 off. You're already great, bottom line, from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Russell, how are you?
Doing good, doing good. I was on the road this week earlier, and Arkansas State coaches and ULM coaches were together, and you should have heard the way they were talking about Louisiana Lafayette, because, you know, Louisiana Lafayette tries to compare themselves as, or claim themselves as, the University of Louisiana.
Yes, which is false.
Yes, you should have heard them going back. You would have been a proud alum.
I would have been. I'm glad. Did you tell the ULM coaches I said talons up?
I did not. You but didn't? It was nice. It was nice to see them, and It was funny. It was funny because hearing as much as you talk about it, especially when they came to Ole Miss last year, the talk of everybody and the PA wanting you to call them the University of Louisiana, and you just wouldn't do it.
No, because it's not the University of Louisiana.
No, the University of Louisiana, at least to them, is LSU.
Well, there is no University
of
Louisiana.
Yes, exactly.
The University of Louisiana at Lafayette is the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.
That's right.
There's a University of Louisiana at Monroe. There's Southeastern Louisiana University. There is Northwestern State University, which is in Nacogdoches, Louisiana. And there's LSU, which is Louisiana State University.
Yeah, true. Exactly.
A flagship institution in the state of Louisiana. It is LSU.
Are you sure? ULM's not there yet.
I mean, look, if there's a flagship institution in this nation, it is the University of Louisiana at Monroe, home of the Warhawks. Talons up, bitches.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice. I mean, I've seen coaches from all over the country in the past few weeks, being on the road in Memphis and in Mississippi. I've seen, you know, the small schools like ULM, Arkansas State. I've seen all the way up to Alabama and Tennessee. Georgia spent some time in Mississippi. I mean, the talent in Mississippi has created such a almost like a coach's clinic in the state at these high schools. Like, if you go to Horn Lake any day of the week, you're going to see at least four or five Power Five coaches.
I always want to have fun on Twitter with the ULM thing. Like when a kid gets his ULM offer and he puts, hey, got an offer from ULM or whatever, and he has his edit with the ULM thing. You know what I'm talking about? I always want to go, man, congratulations. Highlight of your life. But I know I'll get yelled at.
If he does, I don't think he would know the connotation behind it.
This guy's recruiting me. And so I can't have fun with it. I want to have fun. I'm always so tempted to go, oh, I would have so much fun with that right there.
You'd be the first ULM fan to ever tweet at a recruit.
Well, the funny part about the ULM thing with me, so I went to grad school there. I was there for a year and a half. I went to all of zero athletic events. If you asked me today to name, like, I could name the head football coach because I joke about him a lot. If you asked me to name a member of the coaching staff, anything, from the offensive coordinator down to like the assistant trainer, I'm screwed. If you ask me to name a player on that team, I can't do it. But people think, I'm serious. There's these people. They're these literal people that think I'm serious about the ULM thing. I did go to school there. I got a master's there. And I mean, I have Monroe and North Louisiana roots and stuff, but the people that think I'm serious about the ULM thing crack me up.
Yeah, it definitely is. Also, another little bit of news. Brandon linebacker safety commit Jalen Stanley, who broke, I think it was four bones in his hand last week. He's having surgery, actually, as we record this, to repair that. He'll be out 8 weeks. He'll miss the rest of spring practice, but he won't miss any of the, you know, summer camp and anything like that.
So he won't miss anything meaningful.
No. And that's something I've noticed as well. You know, that's kind of the negative, at least in Ohio, when, you know, I talk to coaches and I'm like, well, you know, why don't you do spring ball? And like, well, number one, we don't have the bodies. And number two, it's just another way for kids to get injured.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was at Tupelo and Jordan Jernigan got a little bit injured. I was the first day of Tupelo's practice was when Standifer tore his Achilles. And then Mingo was a little bit lame on last week when I was at Brandon, and then Stanley falls and breaks his arm, basically, or his wrist.
Were you there when he got hurt?
No. Thankfully, that would have been a nasty injury.
Because at some point, you become the jinx.
Right. Y'all start getting posts on the message board, you know, stop going on the road. You're causing these injuries. I was also, not to get too off topic, but the Cavs last night really impressed me. The way they were able to pull that game out, I did not expect that to happen. Well, I mean, I did expect it to happen, but at one point I was a little bit worried because of the way that, you know, like Kevin Love's been a liability all season long, but these past two games he's actually stepped up and made the shots when needed, which has been huge because, you know, they expect so much from him, and the way that LeBron's been playing, you know, he needs somebody else he can count on.
Jay Tate and I are taping a Greatest Pod in the South later today. It's Wednesday morning as we tape this, 10:04. Central time, central daylight time. And I have a hot LeBron take. Oh, I will put out there.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not a, quote, LeBron fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I respect greatness. LeBron, I'll save it for this afternoon, but LeBron does some things that I'm not sure somebody else ever did.
No, not at all. I'm looking forward to hearing that hot take, but I mean, I kind of agree with the presumed hot take. I mean,
I can't even name another person that did some things about this same stage in his career that someone else never really did.
Who?
Kobe.
Yeah. I mean, his last game, he put up that crazy stat line.
If you offer a basketball player Pau Gasol or Scottie Pippen as your Batman, as your Robin to your Batman, who you taking? Scottie?
Pippen, yeah.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
Who is LeBron James's Robin right now?
That's what, you know, Kevin Love's trying to be, and that's what they've expected him to be.
But if it's not Kevin Love, who is it?
Exactly. There isn't one.
And yet, here they are.
Yeah. I mean, they escaped the Pacers. I mean, the Pacers, they played so well that entire series. I mean, Oladipo is a budding superstar.
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Domantas Sabonis was terrific.
Yeah, I mean.
It hurts me to my very soul because.
They won that trade.
You know, I was getting ready before we started. I was going to say, hey, man, how about your Braves? But then you have to do that, so it's all right.
I mean, but with that, you know, Paul George, he's got a decision on his hands. But it wasn't entirely his fault, but he's got to take some responsibility for not the first time in his life, but for the first time in a while, because while he wasn't the perceived leader of the Thunder, obviously Westbrook was, performing like that on a elimination game is just unacceptable.
Yeah, I've gone around and around after watching that game because I watched that game in Norman, Oklahoma, and Carson cried at the end. And you realize that I need to be a dad. And so I didn't think about it till later. The more I think about it, the more I pin that on Russell. Honestly, you can't take that many shots. You've got to involve your teammates. You've got to play the game. Rubio got left that game in the first quarter with the hamstring issue. You got to win that game. Now, it wouldn't have mattered because neither one of these teams were going to beat the Rockets.
Right, right.
But you had to win that game. And if I'm Paul George, now here's where I'm different. And we're going to get to recruiting stuff, I promise. We're going to get there. Relax.
It's May 2nd.
It's May 2nd. Here we go. Deep. We're going to do this together. Deep breath in. Exhale. Okay. If I'm Paul George, I don't stay in Oklahoma City.
No.
But I don't go to the Lakers. Because if I'm Paul George, I'm honest with myself. I'm an honest with myself kind of guy. I look in the mirror and I go, you're fat and you're bald and you're ugly. So deal with it. Understand those are your limitations physically. So be cool with what you wear and how you present yourself because you're ugly. If I'm Paul George, I'm looking in the mirror and I am saying in a closeout game, I went 2 for 16 with 5 points in a closeout game. I went 2 for 16 with 5 points and I was supposed to guard Donovan Mitchell and he torched my ass in the third quarter. And that's okay. It happens. My point would be I'm not going to LA where I've got to be Batman now and where the media is going to crucify me because, hey, who took the blame the other night? Russell. Russell Westbrook took the blame. Carmelo got some, but Russell Westbrook got the blame. Billy Donovan got the blame. Paul George was kind of Teflon. If I'm Paul George, I don't go to LA. So I do one of two things. I either join LeBron in Cleveland, and Cleveland could do a sign and trade with the Thunder where they ship Kevin Love and something over.
You're just getting hopeful now.
No. I'm doing the Paul George thing.
Yeah.
Or, and this would be my first choice if I'm Paul George. You know what I'm wearing next year? The red, white, and blue of the Philadelphia 76ers.
I mean, that would be a great fit. You know, you're starting to see Philly's youth kind of shine through against Boston, which is getting in the way. I mean, the way Terry Rozier's played in that series has been, not even just in that series, against Milwaukee. And that he looks like a young Eric Bledsoe to me.
Yes. But next year, all these Sixers, no matter how this thing ends, they're going to have playoff experience.
Exactly.
They're going to be a better team next year. Embiid, Simmons, Fultz, Covington, Redick, Ilyasova. If I'm the Sixers, I go get Paul George. And if I'm Paul George, I join the Sixers.
Especially with the, you know, being in the East, why not?
Well, just it won't all be on me.
Yeah.
I'll be a star still, but I won't have to be Batman.
It's crazy how different the two processes were for their rebuilds. The Lakers, who were, you know, always every summer trying to get into the free agent sweepstakes. And meanwhile, the 76ers just tanked and lost and got these top draft picks. And they ended up getting to the playoffs before the Lakers did, partially just because of that.
Finally, before we get to recruiting, congrats to your Braves. As we tape this, they're 17-11. Soraka was really good last night. Acuna's been great. They're fun. Mets are still hanging in there. The Phillies are right there. Washington in fourth place, under 500. Bryce Harper gets walked all the time. The Marlins are already out of it, basically. The Braves could be playing interesting, meaningful baseball in August for the first time in a long time.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it would be awesome to see. The NL East is just – it's been crazy so far because, you know, you have the Phillies overmanaging everybody. I think they lost to the Marlins yesterday. And then you've got the Nationals struggling. Like you said, Harper's getting walked any chance he can. They beat up the Pirates last night, though.
Yes.
And then you've got the Mets who started out on fire. The thing I saw with the Braves yesterday that was impressive was the first inning against Noah Syndergaard. You know, these young kids, these two 20-year-olds, just right off the bat starting off with back-to-back hits. I think Acuna's his double in the first inning was like 108 miles off the bat. It was awesome to see. Acuna is batting second for years to come, and putting NC Arte at the nine hole has really worked well because he's basically like a second leadoff hitter. But at the same time, you know, the AL pundits and everything, having the pitcher in the eight spot is kind of weird. But the Cubs did that with Addison Russell when they first brought him up, didn't they?
Yeah, they kind of moved him around. The Cubs had all those young kids come up at once, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's...
So it was a shuffle.
That's kind of what the Braves are doing, but in a different manner. I think Soroka's not the only young pitcher you'll see. I think Kobe Allard's going to get called up at some point. He's been tearing it up in AAA. And then you've also got Jose Bautista just down there yesterday. He had a go-ahead home run yesterday for Gwinnett to win that game. I mean, he's starting to see the ball better. But another thing is, you know, with Acuna, when he was in AAA, he was struggling because nobody was pitching to him. And now you see that same thing happening with Jose Bautista. Number one, because he hasn't, you know, seen pitches because he didn't participate in spring training anywhere. And also because, you know, no one's going to wants to be that guy that gave up the home run to Jose Bautista that got him called up to the majors.
All right, here we go. We'll start recruiting before, buddy. Here we go. One more time. Okay. Your impressions in the Memphis area. These are questions that you asked yourself. Russell
yes.
Johnson's questions to Russell Johnson.
Yes,
on rebelgrove.com. It's a website in the Rivals Network.
I still got out-asked by C-Strand.
You did. He asked more than you. The podcast is free. The website is not, but the website is full of information. It's rebelgrove.com. It's part of the rivals.com network. We would love for you to try it. Your impressions in the Memphis area of Sumrall.
Sumrall's gotten rave reviews from the coaches at Whitehaven, even into DeSoto County. They were really impressed. What happened at Whitehaven was when he first went there to see the coaches and to, you know, look at the players and everything, was they were in the middle of testing, and he wasn't able to, you know, actually see them. And then he gets a call from the coach after he leaves, and he's like, hey, man, you might want to come back. I've got three 2020 linebackers who I think you're going to love. And he goes out there back to Whitehaven after I think he was at Horn Lake. And he was just blown away by the overall athleticism of the Whitehaven defense. I got to see Whitehaven up close. There was their first night in pads on Monday. It was a little bit interesting, you know, practicing at 6 p.m. on a Monday in Memphis was a bit taxing. But other than that, I mean, the athleticism is there. And the players and everybody who I've talked to in that area have really enjoyed Sumrall. They call him a rising star in the coaching industry and somebody who, you know, could do well in that area because of his persistence, because of his consistency, and because of his ability to communicate both, you know, on the phone and on like Twitter and social media and everything. He's become a complete package for Ole Miss. I know he'll be spending time in Louisiana this week, but his first impressions in Memphis were very, very good and well received. And the interesting thing is the man who is supposedly recruiting Memphis is in California and in Illinois this week. I'm sure they're doing the positional recruiting type thing with him, which might be smarter than giving him a territory. But at the same time, if you have all of these ties in this area, why aren't you spending time there? Why you haven't been there? I mean, you're supposed to be there this week, supposedly. You're supposed to go to Briarcrest, I think, Thursday or Friday. But you haven't been there, and this is the third week of the evaluation period?
What do you say?
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, possibly they're reassigning that area. But at the same time, you know, if you're all the way out in California, what are you doing? What are you doing on the plane? Are you talking to these kids in Memphis? Are you talking to the kids in DeSoto County? If Ole Miss doesn't sign N'Kobe Dean, he won't have a job next year. He won't have a job probably even if they do sign N'Kobe Dean, but that is an additional thing.
You're projecting a lot of staff overturn.
I mean,
you are, not me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's inevitable. Number one, when you have the offense that Longo has and the ability to recruit that he's proved, even though he doesn't, you know, particularly enjoy it. And then you have a former NFL coach as your defensive coordinator and somebody as fast rising as John Sumrall is as your linebacker coach.
You mentioned N'Kobe Dean. What's the latest?
With him, there's been an emergence with two other schools. Auburn's really gotten into the picture with him. I would say they are the second biggest team to watch. I kind of mentioned it on the board over the weekend when I was there on Friday, but Stanford won't let N'Kobe take an official visit until January. And that kind of
really,
that doesn't scare him away, but it's kind of offsetting to him because he can't get out there. He's not going to pay his own dime to go all the way out to Stanford.
What is Stanford's strategy there? Is it to make sure he's serious?
Make sure he's serious. Make sure he's accepted into the school.
They don't
want to wait. They get what I think a certain amount of official visits, especially at Stanford, and they don't want to use those on kids that aren't going to get accepted into the school.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Demetrius Robertson, the prized recruit, probably the number one recruit Peeler's ever signed when he was at Cal, the five-star from Georgia. He was waiting and waiting and waiting. It took an official to Stanford while awaiting the admissions process. And I'm sure if they had the chance to do that over, they wouldn't have let him visit until he had gotten accepted. Another thing with Dean's academics, he's obviously a stud in the classroom as well as on the field. But there are a couple AP classes that Horn Lake doesn't offer that he would have to go to a different school in order to be accepted into the school, into Stanford, that, you know, he'd have to go to like DeSoto Central for part of the day or to some other school. And that just creates another hurdle that I'm not sure that he wants to do or his family wants to do. So, like, Auburn's emerged and Florida State's right there as well. Having his dad in Lakeland, Florida really helps them. And I feel like if they are able to sell his dad as much on the program as Ole Miss has with his mom, it's going to be a neck and neck race all the way to the end. And Cam Akers obviously plays a factor into that.
Commitment status of Jerry and Ely. How much does his baseball season change his stock in MLB draft circles? I saw where he put out a release of 10 schools that he will be keeping an eye on. I noticed that none of them were Major League Baseball franchises.
No, not yet. You know, he's going to enjoy this process as much as he possibly can. And that's something I kind of caution Ole Miss fans and fans in general. With this, he remains committed fully to Ole Miss. Yes, he dropped a top 10. He didn't call it a top 10, but it's a top 10. And those are schools that he's interested in. LSU wasn't on there, which I thought was kind of interesting, but LSU hasn't really shown as much interest as you would have expected. At a school that's not on the top 10 that offered him yesterday, Notre Dame, I expect them to get a visit. Just because, you know, it's Notre Dame. If a kid from Mississippi gets a chance to officially visit a school like Notre Dame, it's going to be hard to turn down. I know that's Charleston cornerback DeAndre Prince. That's another school he wants to officially visit just to get up there and to get to Notre Dame. It's one of those, I don't know if I'd call it a bucket list visit, but it's something that, you know, kids want to do. Kids hear a lot about it and everything like that. Oklahoma obviously was on the list along with Mississippi State. Those are two schools that are obviously pushing very hard for his good friend, Jerrion Jones. And then on top of the top schools list Ely dropped, you've got the rumors floating all over the Jackson area and even into Florida that he's possibly going to be transferring for his senior year of high school. Obviously, Ole Miss does not want him leaving the state of Mississippi for his senior year at all. And so if he does end up at IMG, I would consider that as probably a number one warning sign that, you know, there, things might not be going as well as possible.
You ask, when can Tisdale's coattails be expected?
Jalen Curry, the wide receiver from St. Pius X in Houston, has really taken a liking to the University of Tennessee. He was tweeting yesterday with Wanya Morris, the offensive tackle from Grayson, who committed to the Vols. And I think they have emerged as a runner-up right now with Ole Miss for him. And, you know, getting him on campus is what's going to be the problem. And as I had mentioned earlier this week as well on the website, if you were a subscriber, you probably already saw it, that Ole Miss does not want to use early official visits if they can help it at all. if they have a chance to have an official visitor come the weekend before the early signing period or come the third week in May, they're going to choose the weekend before the early signing period because they want to get the last visit. There's some stats and numbers that go into it, and they're also going to obviously keep track of that this year. But unless somebody is like set on a decision, like if Tisdale would have wanted to take an official visit before he committed, they would have been fine with that because they knew he was so close to a decision and because the quarterback is such an integral part of the program.
You talked about a new 2018 JUCO offensive target, 2018 meaning this coming season. What's the latest there?
Yeah, his name is David Suave. He plays for Navarro College in Texas. He is somebody who I really wasn't sure about. I didn't know exactly what was going on. You know, I went back and forth with him a little bit, and he's like, yeah, I graduated in July. I'm like, what? I was wondering why he didn't have a rivals profile, and it was because he was floating so far under the radar, number one being at Navarro, and number two being that he has a chance to get on campus this fall. Obviously, everything fell apart with the Cal grad transfer who was basically discharged in a negative manner from Cal. And with that, they need depth on the offensive line. And if they're able to get David Suave, who has really good size, I believe he's over 6 foot seven and over 300 pounds. I mean, if he redshirts, he could be ready to go if you need him as your Greg Little replacement next year, or you could put him on the right side if, you know, Givens gets hurt or if concussions get in the way again.
Who's the next commit?
That's a good question. You know, everybody always likes to ask that. And with that, you know, these kids with baseball season ending at schools, you know, unfortunately, some are all lost. I believe it was Monday night. I think it was West Lauderdale they played. I'm not exactly sure, but some are all lost, which means that Dennis Jackson's baseball season is over. He'll probably take a week or two off, you know, just from the recruiting process. Try to be a kid. You know, that's another thing that, you know, gets lost in the shuffle is these are kids. And sometimes, you know, they want to, after all of their, you know, athletic commitments are done, they kind of just want to spend some time with their family or, you know, go places. But once he gets onto the Ole Miss campus, you could see that develop quickly. I still think Mingo's just a ticking time bomb, the wide receiver from Brandon. Alabama watched him last week. They were impressed, but they didn't pull the trigger on an offer yet. So I would go with Mingo being the next one.
What position does Ra'Darius Jones play at the next level?
See, this is something that gets brought up quite a bit when you're up at Horn Lake High School and you see him working out right now exclusively at quarterback. You see the athleticism and you see the limitations being put on him by playing quarterback. But in Mississippi, it's so bad. I don't know how to say this nicely. The quarterback play is so poor in the state of Mississippi, yes, for the most part,
yes,
that they've just put the best athlete there and pray that he can throw a tight spiral once in a while and get the ball to their receivers. But in the next level, Radar is going to play either cornerback or safety. I would lean towards cornerback. He's close to 6'2". He's about 2 or 3 inches taller than N'Kobe Dean. When you see the two close together, you can notice that pretty easily. And you know, once he puts some weight on, he's going to be a shutdown corner, I think.
So who's anyone coming in this weekend?
They're working on getting a couple. Obviously, like I said, with baseball season ending at schools across the country, there's a linebacker from California with some ties to Summerall who's thinking about visiting. It depends on, you know, how his schedule lines up this weekend, and you know, getting out here for an unofficial is obviously a little bit hard. I was a little surprised by that. You know, that Ryan Helinski kid from California, he was able to take all of his unofficial visits just on the drop of a hat. I mean, it's amazing to me, you know, being who I am, that these kids can afford to just take these unofficial visits, you know, get on these planes and go all over the country as unofficial visits. I think that's what the NCAA, you know, your favorite topic lately.
Yes.
That's what I think.
I'm a
that's
big fan.
I think that's something that they thought about when giving these kids early official visits. Something that I mentioned to last weekend when, you know, we were talking about early official visits is, you know, pushing up the early signing period. You know, if you want these kids to take early official visits, why not let them sign in June or July rather than wait until December when there's inevitable staff turnover between December and February, as we saw, which is going to create turmoil no matter what, no matter if it's publicly or privately.
So you're headed up to Columbus, Ohio, for the big Columbus Rivals camp. You're going to hang out with Urban a little bit. Y'all going to talk some shop, and then you're going to look at Ole Miss targets Did Ole Miss have a lot of targets in that part of the country?
There's not a lot, but the ones that are there are being chased by, you know, programs all over the country. Tanner Bowles committed to Alabama from Kentucky. He's one to watch, obviously. I'm not sure if, you know, when signing day comes around that he's still an Alabama commit. I think Alabama was chasing higher numbers, higher targets above him. And with that, you know, you've also got Zach Carpenter from Archbishop Mueller down there in the Cincinnati area. He should be there. Devontae Dobbs is the number one person I'm trying to talk to when I get there from the Detroit area. Yeah. He went on the bus tour with his school during his spring break, and he stopped at Ole Miss, and he was blown away by everything. But, you know, you hear that from all the kids. So, you know, getting a more honest picture of, you know, what he thought about Ole Miss, if he's going to seriously consider them, because he would plug right in and be that left tackle next year when Greg Little leaves. He's a Rivals 100 member and one of the top kids in the country. Most people have him pegged as a Michigan State lean, but the longer, obviously, he waits out, the more less likely it is that he ends up there.
All right, we're going to get to Sean Williams in a couple minutes. We'll hit a couple of these questions, then we'll take a break, talk to Sean, come back. I'm not going to ask about MSU's best recruiter. I don't know. We'll go there.
He's asked that question, I think, 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to get into the whole Hugh Freeze thing. If I'm an AD, I'm very concerned about Hugh Freeze and Twitter. I'm not hiring Hugh Freeze as my head coach until I can either have control of his Twitter account or until he doesn't have a Twitter account.
There's some serious smoke going around in Baton Rouge about him.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. I know some people there, and they're intrigued by him.
But he has to bury the hatchet before he ends up anywhere, in my opinion.
Yeah, I said this the other day on the Oxford Exxon podcast. He can't be the Reverend Hugh.
No.
Down there. It won't work. It just won't work. It's because it's BS, and now that's been exposed as BS, he has to get away from it and just coach football. He's a good football coach, and he's coached football, but there's nothing in his Twitter profile that indicates that he's prepared to do that. He wants to be the Reverend Freeze. Any 2019 recruits you believe could start their first year?
There's tons. I mean, Daiwon Black, if he's able to qualify. Nakobe Dean, if they sign him. Let's see. On the offensive line, Devontae Dobbs, if they're able to pull that off. I could see Tisdale pushing Corral quite a bit in their quarterback competition next spring, which I think would be interesting. You know, we had a thread on the board last night talking about Corral's arm strength. His arm strength is never going to be the issue. His arm strength is, you know, one of the best in the country, if not, at least, especially in that signing class last year. It was loaded with, you know, Justin Fields and several others. But accuracy is going to be the kryptonite, I guess you could say. And Tisdale has that, and his lack of a top speed is what might end up winning Corral the job in the end. On the defensive line, you're signing Jaron Handy, he would come in and start right away. He's somebody that you can plug in the three technique or at defensive end if you need him. You could even put him on the edge if that's something you wanted to do, and he'd be able to make an impact.
I can actually answer the part about the plan for the unofficial visit ban. Number one, I think the anticipation is it's going to be lifted. Number two, if it's not lifted, it won't go into effect until all of the appeals process is complete, which is much later in the summer, early fall. That's why they're bringing guys in as many times as they can right now, because while it's under appeal, it's not in effect. In the end, it could only potentially impact a couple of unofficial visits in the football season where they have to limit the number of times that a guy comes in unofficially. And if any of those guys are going to be coming in as December grads, they'll have an official visit sometime in early December. So in the end, it was a penalty to make the NCAA look tough and mean and rough that will not have a whole hell of a lot of impact, in my opinion. If you were asked by Matt Luke, what is the one action you think the staff needs to do for the best success, what would it be? Would it be to offer someone or move coaches or handle visits different or anything else?
I would say not to be intimidated by in-state ties. You know, there is a lot of talk about a quarterback in-state, this class, who won an Ole Miss offer as a quarterback, who coveted it and kind of got a little bit pissy when he didn't get it, and so did his high school coach. And when that kind of stuff happens, the pressure builds on a program, especially a program, you know, struggling with the publicity and everything going on with Shea Patterson and Michigan and the NCAA and everything. They kind of got a little bit pressured into offering him, but they offered him as an athlete and not a quarterback. My thing is Why not just not offer him at all? Instead of creating this false pretense and false excitement, false hope, both for him and for the high school coach, of a program that competes for state titles every year. They're not there yet, but they're competing. And with that, you might be burning a little bit of a bridge, especially with an Ole Miss alum as the head coach is. Other than that, you know, you have to decide whether or not you want to be a positional recruiting staff or a territorial recruiting staff. You can't do a little bit of both, because that's kind of when you get into the gray area. That's when kids start getting talked to twice. They hear the same thing from two different coaches. And that's when things get messed up. You know, hiring Siski this offseason and the off-the-field staff in general has done a great job of getting things organized and kind of put together in a way that wasn't there in the past.
All right, we're going to get to Sean Williams here in just a minute. First, let me tell you that today's podcast is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast, well, then listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. Now, Sean Williams on the Billy's Pecans Hotline here on the Soft Verbal Podcast.
We've got Sean Williams from the PowerMizzou.com and VandySports.com joining us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well. How about you, man?
Doing good, man. Doing good. How are you adjusting to doing this full time? I know in the past you were, you know, kind of working on the side. How's that been going for you?
It's a little different, man. You know, you wake up, you're like, oh, cool, man. I don't have to be anywhere anytime soon. So I just kind of really just plan out your day and, you know, just kind of depending on how I feel when I wake up, how motivated I am to do it, whether it's early morning or whether it's middle of the day or the afternoon. So
yeah, the nights get later and the mornings get earlier as signing day approaches, that's for sure. What would you say is the hardest part so far since you've, you know, kind of switched to that?
Say that again.
What's been the biggest adjustment you've had since, you know, switching to full time?
Really, it's just kind of like a maintaining kind of a consistent schedule for me, because that's kind of what I've been used to, even though I was doing it part time, you know. Part-time job, you go in, you clock out. So the biggest thing for me, just having, I guess, you know, working from home and having a little bit more free time is just kind of, you know, scheduling out routine. So I kind of make a, you know, like night before, I kind of make a daily schedule of what I want to do the next day and just try to get those things accomplished and, you know, just kind of do that every day. So I'll have, you know, I'll wake up in the morning and, you know, kind of look at my goals for the day and make sure I get those done. So that's kind of what I do anyway.
Yeah, that's not bad. Have you had trouble at all explaining to your family, you know, what you're doing now?
Yeah, a little bit. Just because mainly the biggest thing is, you know, like weekends, you know, usually Saturdays, Sundays when I usually get together with, you know, family, mom and dad and my brother and stuff. And, you know, mom, she'll text me every once in a while. She's like, well, we're going to be in town Saturday. You going to be available? I'm like, I got to cover a football camp or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's a whole new world.
Or, yeah. If she wants to schedule anything, she knows she's got to holler at me ahead of time. So, and just kind of figure out what my schedule is. So
not long term. Are you going to be staying in Bowling Green, or are you going to be moving closer towards either Missouri or Vanderbilt?
You know, I'm right there, you know, kind of at Vanderbilt. So, I mean, you know, it takes about an hour for me to drive down there. So, I mean, that's not bad, you know. And, I mean, you drive down to Nashville, that's a big hotbed for recruiting. A lot of good kids are down there. And, you know, majority of those kids, you know, Vanderbilt's either looking at or they've offered. So, you know, it's pretty good. I mean, you know, Gabe at the Missouri side, he told me, he's like, you know, you could – you can move to Columbia. It's like, you don't have to, you know, so it's all about just kind of getting kids on the phone and then, you know, going to, you know, our rivals camps, going to other camps and stuff like that. And just kind of, you know, keeping up with everything and, you know, just building relationships that way. So it's, you know, it's more about working the phones and, you know, being active on Twitter and things like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm in a pretty good spot. I like Bowling Green, you know. I've thought about maybe moving down to Nashville or, you know, something like that. That would probably be my next move, but I kind of like it where I'm at. Nashville, it's a cost of living down there is a little bit more expensive than Bowling Green too. So
just a bit.
Got to take that into consideration.
That and moving's never easy. Now you were talking about camps. You were talking about camps.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's not. Go ahead, man. Nah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
And overall, moving is, oh gosh, moving's exhausting. But you were at camps obviously this past weekend. What stood out to you about that 7-on-7 tournament in Nashville? Obviously, I was here covering unofficial visitors, so I didn't get a chance to head up there.
Really, it was kind of more of a you know, kind of local teams down there like CBA and Elite Three. I know Red Zone was down there from Knoxville and Southern Express. They were down there. Of course, you know, they're kind of based out of Alabama. So they had, you know, some pretty good kids. I know the Jaden Hill kid, he's got a bunch of SEC offers. He was down there playing cornerback. I mean, he obviously looks the part. But, you know, I kind of focus a lot of my attention mostly on Deshaun Page. He's a kid out of Knoxville Fulton that's on Elite Three. Obviously, Missouri's offered him. And, you know, I think they got a pretty good shot to land him. He's just got to visit there. And he said he's going to visit there in the next month or so. So I was taking highlight clips of him a lot. So, but, you know, J3M was down there. And, you know, they're that Nashville-based team. They got a bunch of talent on there. Donis Ote and Lance Wilhoit were down there. I know they were missing some guys. I know, you know, Trey Knox, Jackson Hanna, and Devin Boddy were on that team. But I don't think they were playing that weekend. But, yeah, I mean, there's some pretty good talent down there just for kind of it being more of a local event. But it's a lot of fun. And I had a good time, man. I got sunburnt, but yeah. It's okay. I'm better now.
I've learned that. I've been on the road. I've been to, I think, 21 high schools now this spring. And I've gotten some pretty serious sunburn. And it, luckily, it's turned into a nice tan. These 7-on-7 tournaments, I know how I do things. You know, I try to, you know, get them in between games and that kind of stuff from an interview standpoint. How much of the time you spend there are you interviewing kids? And how much of the time are you, you know, actually watching what's going on the field?
I mean, like, it just really depends. Like, you know, you're more of the 7-on-7 master than I am, you know, I mean, you know more about this stuff than I do. So I'm still really honestly getting acclimated to it. And, I mean, it's fun to go to and it's fun to watch. You know, like I said, I paid a lot more of attention because to Deshaun Page this weekend. So, you know, I interviewed him in between games and then whenever his team was out there, I would, you know, take highlight clips of him. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, I pretty much highlight clipped every play he did. And so then I, you know, when I got home, I just kind of dumbed it down and, you know, got the best highlight clips and create a little highlight video that I'm going to post up later in the week. But yeah, I mean, when he wasn't playing, I was kind of watching, you know, both sides of the field and just kind of watching, see who kind of stood out and things like that. So, but like I said, man, when it comes to 7-on-7 stuff, I'm the one that texts you all the time, so you're the man in that regard.
I mean, you've been traveling quite a bit because then the next day you were at O-line D-line camp, right?
Yeah, the National Playmakers Academy down there in Nashville. They always have a lot of good players. They have a little big man challenge is what they called it on Sunday, and it's a lot of younger kids there. You know, really the highlight guys were there was Tymon Mitchell out of FRA. Joseph Anderson, he was a little late, but he showed up and kind of worked out a little bit. He didn't really do any one-on-ones. And then they had another guy that kind of stands out just size-wise is Jalen Gupton. He's a 2019 kid out of Stratford.
Yeah, he's big.
I can't remember who's offered him. I think maybe South Carolina. He's got a couple of SEC offers. And then Reggie Grimes, I think he's a 2020 defensive end. He's out of Mount Juliet.
Yeah, so, I know you're talking
he's
about.
Another one that – Yeah, he's already got a handful of SEC offers, and I think Louisville just offered him. He was down there. So those are kind of the four guys that stood out. There was a couple of younger guys that looked pretty good. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, those guys obviously stand out, and, you know, I was kind of there to sh- shadow Tymon a little bit too and talk to him. So
right, right. What did what's the feel you get with Tymon Mitchell? I know Ole Miss has offered. I'm pretty sure he probably didn't mention them very much. But what do you get with him? What's the feel?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think with him, it, you know, he's a really high academic kid. He told me he visited Stanford and Cal recently. He's been to Georgia. I'm not really sure how high on their board he is, but, you know, he's been to Vanderbilt like three times this spring. He's been to Vanderbilt a lot. His dad's a Vanderbilt alum. I think Vanderbilt's, you know, I think they're going to be one of the definitely one of the top schools for him whenever he decides to kind of, you know, dwindle things down. You know, obviously Stanford, I think, is probably going to be one, too, if you're talking about just, you know, high academic institutions. And like I said, with Stanford, I'm not really sure where he is on the board. I know Vanderbilt, he's their number one guy defensive tackle-wise. So, you know, I think Vanderbilt's probably going to be in the mix for him. I know he's maybe going to do, like, some official visits. I think he said maybe in a couple in the summer, maybe take a couple other unofficial visits here pretty soon, and then kind of narrow his list down, take a couple of officials early summer. He said, you know, he'll see how he feels after those. He's kind of playing it by ear, so just in terms of commitment date and stuff like that. But I would really think it's official visit-wise. I mean, I'd say it's going to be Vanderbilt, Stanford probably in the mix, and, you know, we'll kind of see who else kind of gets involved there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It sounds like he's getting ready to drop a Sweet 16 list, as they like to call him these days, with these top schools.
top 32, man. Come on.
Now, you know, talking about official visits in the summer, what's your take on that? I know how I feel about it. I know how my co-host Neil feels about it. What's your take on it?
You know, I'm cool with it, you know, because especially for the kids that are going to kind of early enrollee, that are going to be, you know, enrolling early. I mean, it'd give them an opportunity to take a couple. And, you know, I'm not saying – I think the smart move is probably not to take all five, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But I don't get the sense that a lot of kids are doing that. You know, a lot of kids I hear, especially the ones that are early enrolling, you know, they're going to probably take a couple, early, you know, in the spring, summer, late summer, and then they're going to wait, maybe take a couple in the early fall and then make a decision. So that kind of seems to be the norm. And as long as you're not taking all five, I'm good with that. I think it gives kids a little bit more flexibility just in terms of, you know, if they really like a school, and especially if they're, you know, planning to be a mid-year enrollee, you know, it kind of gives them a little bit more flexibility to take those early visits and figure things out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure. I'll be shocked if anybody who gets one of those early official visits actually signs the kid in the fall, though. That would be stunning to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you said Jackson Hanna obviously wasn't there. Have you talked to him recently at all? Have you kind of got a feel for him and what he's thinking?
Yeah, I actually got a little bit of info from him yesterday, and obviously this weekend I got a little info too. He actually visited Vanderbilt on Saturday, so that's why he wasn't at the 7-on-7 tournament. So
valid excuse.
Yeah. So he was there visiting, which is kind of big. I know, you know, talking to him. I talked to him last time. I talked to him in depth was late January. He was at the NPA workouts. I know he's really high on Vanderbilt, just growing up being a hometown school. He said he grew up a Vanderbilt fan. So, but I know he's had contact with them, but I don't, you know, as far as getting on campus and talking to the coaches, it's something I don't think he's done a whole lot. So for him to kind of get on campus and, you know, have a lot of one-on-one, he spent the entire day with Coach Mason and, the defensive coordinator, Jason Tarver. So, and that's a pretty big thing, and I think Vanderbilt's going to be definitely a serious contender for him. I know when I talked to him back in late January, he said he was going to probably release a top five sometime late spring, early summer, and probably take some visits after that. He said Vanderbilt's definitely going to be in there. I could see just another team I think that probably stick out for him. It's probably Duke. Duke would probably be in his top five, so I'd say there'd be a contender, and, you know, he's got some offers from some, you know, like Alabama and stuff like that. But, you know, once again, it's going to be like, you know, where's he at on the board? You know, you just, you know, you don't know who else would be in that top five. But I say Duke and Vanderbilt's definitely going to be in that for him. So the fact that he went there to Vanderbilt this past weekend and spent most of the day there just hanging out with Tarver and Mason, I think it's pretty, that puts him in the serious contender range right now. So,
Yeah, I'll shift to Missouri in a second. I kind of want to get to basketball with Vanderbilt for a minute. What happened? I know Langford was trending towards Vanderbilt for quite some time, and it seemed things kind of fell apart late, or was something else take place there?
You know, there's a lot of talking, just talking to everybody. I think there's just a lot of things changed around the McDonald's All-American game, and I think it really kind of, you know, everybody's saying, you know, his father was kind of steering the boat. Now, you know, I don't know. I think ultimately everybody thinks Romeo made the decision, but, you know, I think just kind of things changed during McDonald's All-American game, and as far as this momentum, you know, swinging from Vanderbilt and kind of swinging over to Indiana. So, you know, and obviously in the end, it ended up being Indiana. I went up there and covered his announcement, and it was quite a show. But
I bet it looked like it was.
You know, yeah. Well, I went up there, and you know, honestly, it was like, you know, there's a 0.05% chance, you know, he'll commit to Vanderbilt. But it's like, you know, and the chance a miracle happens, I'll be here. But whenever his his preacher got up there and compared him to Abraham Lincoln, and and his head coach got up there and compared him to Oscar Robertson, and when his dad got up there and was kind of playing to the crowd, and, you know, as far as, hey, how many Vanderbilt fans are here, how many Kansas fans, and how many Indiana fans, I'm like, well, I think that's a 0% chance he's coming to Vanderbilt now, so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, those are always fun. You know,
you know, I mean, missing out on Langford, I mean, yeah, he would be a fantastic piece to add to the Vanderbilt class, but, I mean, they got 2 5-star kids and Simi Chatu and Darius Garland, and they got Aaron Neesmith, and he's ranked 66. I mean, any other recruiting class, Aaron Neesmith would be the highest ranked. You know, if you take Simi Chatu and Darius Garland out, I mean, Neesmith would be the highest ranked kid Vanderbilt's ever got in like the last 10 years. So
that's how it goes. Now, how much pressure is Bryce Drew on next year after signing, you know, 2 5-stars and as highly ranked of a recruiting class as he's brought in?
I don't think the pressure is too bad on him right now. I think a lot of what happened last year was almost kind of expected. I mean, obviously they had a losing record, but I don't think anybody thought they would be as good as they were the year before because Luke Kornet left, and that was your biggest hole to fill, and they didn't feel that, you know, that past year with any, you know, recruiting wise or anything like that. They didn't have a big guy that can protect the rim, and that really hurt them last year. And obviously injuries took their toll. Losing Matthew Fisher Davis there toward, you know, kind of the last quarter of the year. So I don't think the pressure's too bad on him. I mean, I really think this year, you know, given the talent he's got, the talent he's going to have, that's going to be eligible. You know, Matt Ryan's going to be eligible to play from Notre Dame, so he's a really good shooter. They got Yanni Wetzel. He's a big guy that's athletic. He came from Division II, but they think he can be a good rim protector and kind of a guy that can shoot mid-range and long-range jumpers too. So I think as long as Bryce gets this team to the tournament, I think he's good. And honestly, I think even if they fall short of the tournament, go to the NIT or something like that, he's not going to get fired or anything like that. So, but yeah, I think the expectations this year for him are definitely going to be, you got to at least make the NCAA tournament with this roster.
Are you predicting that to happen here on the Soft Verbal Podcast? No pressure.
Not predicting it to happen. I'll say they'll make it to the tournament. You know, they might make it to the tournament as like a, you know, at large 10 seed or something like that. You know, I could see that.
Now, shifting over to Missouri, it seems like it's become a little bit of a war zone over there between St. Louis, within St. Louis area, with Missouri and Illinois. Obviously, you know, being an outsider just like myself, you know, what's going on with that, and how did that kind of take place? I know Illinois hired, I think, was it Trinity Catholic's coach?
Yeah, it's their head coach. He's the tight ends coach over there now at Illinois. So that kind of added fuel to the fire, I guess, of what was already kind of, you know, going on as a battle. Obviously, Lovie Smith being over there, I mean, he's a great name and all, but he hasn't had much success on the football field yet. So
not at all.
But yeah,
no,
the,
no.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah, at all. That's a guy that's on the hot seat right there. But St. Louis, it's always a battle between Illinois and Missouri for that city. And obviously, the thing that kind of swirls around is, obviously, you talk about Trinity Catholic's coach, Patterson's his name. you know, being up at Illinois now and trying to get a lot of those Trinity Catholic kids. I mean, look, Trinity Catholic's loaded. You know, that Lutheran North program in St. Louis is loaded. But, you know, Missouri's done a good job of getting in there, especially with some of the new hires they made on their staff with Dooley and Brad Davis and, you know, those guys. And obviously, A.J. Ofalade, he's now the wide receivers coach. He was director of player personnel. But having those guys where, you know, they can go out and recruit St. Louis is doing them really good. And they're really, you know, it's kind of, you know, Illinois is going to get some guys from St. Louis. I think Missouri is going to get some guys from St. Louis this year. They're Marcus Washington, talking about the Catholic kids, Marcus Washington and Ira Henry. You know, those are two guys. Shimon Cooper's another one. Those are probably three guys that I think they feel pretty good about, particularly Marcus Washington and Ira Henry. So, you know, it'd kind of be interesting to see if Missouri can win that battle. I think they got a better shot at Illinois than they do. And I think a lot of it's going to just really depend on how both teams do this year, you know, because I think, you know, I don't know. I think Washington's probably going to wait and take officials during the fall. And maybe the same case for Ira Henry. So it's, you know, it's really just going to be like, you know, they'll be able to see what direction both those programs are going. So, you know, Illinois got to step their game up to kind of get in there with those guys, I think.
Now, is that a trophy game, or what kind of rivalry are we talking here?
Oh, we're just talking about recruiting rivalry, man. You know,
we can't get them on the schedule to play each other in football.
I don't know how that is. I mean, they play each other every year in basketball, but football's another story. I don't know what the background is on that one, if there's bad blood there or not. So,
they got to get that fixed, man. That would just think of all the money they could rake in, you know, and get it on a mutual site, like play it at Arrowhead Stadium or something like that, and have recruits interested in both programs just go down there. It'd be a show.
Yeah, you can play at Arrowhead or play at the Dome in St. Louis. The Rams aren't using that anymore. So
I don't think anybody wants to use that Dome, to be honest. Now, in the Memphis area, obviously, you know, Missouri and Vanderbilt are both, you know, eager. It seems like they're both eager to get in there. I think Vanderbilt's been kind of a sleeping giant, I guess you could say. Not really a giant, a sleeping power that they could – blow up if, you know, they decide to recruit the Memphis area and basically just even in Mississippi. You know, Missouri's obviously after KJ Jefferson and Vanderbilt's after Devin Body. Do you go down to that area often, and what do you think?
Yeah, I actually don't, and I need to. You're Mr. 7-on-7, you're Mr. Memphis too, so I rely on you a lot of Memphis talk. So, but yeah, I actually do need to go down there. And like I said, you mentioned Devin Body. He's a guy that's, you know, I think Vanderbilt's made a really good impression on early on. He's been to campus at least twice, maybe three times, you know, since they offered him back probably late January, I think, when they had their junior day and they offered him. So
what position did
I know him talking
at?
To him. Yeah. I know talking to him personally, he really likes Vanderbilt. You know, so yeah, Vanderbilt, they do a good job. They get down there. Chris Marv, their inside linebackers coach, he's a White Station alum, so he recruits that area pretty good. You know, obviously they recruit Whitehaven. I mean, ever since Mason took over the head coaching job at Vanderbilt, they've had Whitehaven kids there at their camps by the truckloads. You know, they'll just kind of invite the whole team up there to come to their camps. So they've got a good relationship there. Obviously, last year didn't work out for them too well with Rashad Williams, But like I said, they've got Whitehaven's got plenty of talent. They're still going after, including Devin Body, and you know Whitehaven's got Bryson Eason, the 2020 linebacker, and they got some other dudes there that, you know, I think Vanderbilt at least is showing some interest in. But yeah, Missouri, just kind of flipping the script and talking about Missouri and Memphis. I mean, Barry Odom, of course, was the defensive coordinator for the Tigers down there for, I think, a couple of years before he took over the head coaching job at Missouri. So obviously, you know, he got ties down there, and he knows that area is pretty loaded with talent. So, you know, Missouri is going to get down there and get guys. I mean, they got Tyler Batty last year, and
they flipped him on signing day, right?
What's that?
They flipped him on signing day for Memphis, right?
Yeah. It was pretty much kind of knew he was going to Missouri, but you know. Thought Memphis had a shot too, but yeah, they ultimately beat out Memphis for him on signing day. And obviously, you know, Shamar Nash, he's down at IMG right now, but obviously he's a Memphis Central kid, so they got him committed right now. So hopefully he'll stick. I mean, I think he likes Missouri. He obviously likes Missouri. I talked to him earlier in the year, but I think he just wanted to go ahead and commit because he liked Missouri so much. But he's going to kind of keep things open and kind of obviously look around. He took some visits to like Florida and Arkansas and places like that. But he said unless anything drastic changes, he's probably going to stick with his Missouri offer. But you know, being at IMG, he's going to have a lot more eyes on him, so it'll be interesting to kind of keep watching that.
Now, how's Derek Dooley been doing on the recruiting trail? Is he has he found a territory, and is he out actively recruiting, or is he kind of giving that off to the position coaches?
No, he's been out recruiting. I've seen. I don't think he's got like a specific territory. I know he's been in St. Louis. He's offered some St. Louis kids that you know a lot of Missouri fans thought that Missouri should have offered a long time ago. But I know he's been there. He's been down in Memphis. I know he was down at Lausanne recently during the spring eval. Like first or second week of the spring eval, he was down at Lausanne, down in Memphis. So he was down in the Memphis area recruiting. So
he should have hit me up. We could have got lunch.
yeah. So he's out recruiting pretty good. Yeah. And I mean, he gets a lot of good feedback from kids I talk to, you know, that have visited Missouri and, you know, we're able to kind of sit down in the film room session and talk to him. I mean, people really love him. He's got a good personality. You kind of saw that when he was in Tennessee, you know, he's very personable. He's very open. He's kind of funny. But I think people like that he's got that NFL background now, you know, being with the Cowboys and being the wide receivers coach for so many years. And he's kind of seems like he's going to incorporate some NFL-type strategies for the offense this year through Locke. So just kind of get him a little bit more NFL ready. And I know talking to quarterbacks that have been on campus at Missouri, they kind of like that aspect of, you know, throwing a little bit of NFL-type stuff in there. So just kind of being a little bit more flexible with the offense and everything. So.
Yeah, you know, last real question. You know, you're talking about quarterbacks and Derek Dooley, and I mentioned KJ Jefferson a little earlier. What's your take on Jefferson, and where is he at on the Missouri board?
I would say he's, you know, right now, I think as much as they want to press on Graham Mertz, who's committed to Wisconsin just because he's a Kansas City area guy, I don't think Missouri is going to be able to flip him, and I think they're almost to the point now where they're going to move on. And I know KJ was – he's kind of like the second guy on their board. So I know they would like to get him and in the class. And I know he visited obviously last month and he seemed to really like Missouri. He liked, you know, going back to Dooley, he said he really liked what he had planned for the offense, just in terms of, you know, kind of pro style stuff, NFL type stuff. And he said also just kind of some run pass option type plays in the offense too. He said, you know, that's something he does at his high school all the time. So he said he could really see himself adapting pretty quickly there. So, I know KJ's pretty high on the board right now, and so is the Connor Bezalek kid from Ohio. They like him. I think KJ's probably a little bit higher on Missouri's board right now, but just speaking of Bezalek, he's probably the number one quarterback on Vanderbilt's board right now. So
it's got to be fun when you're covering both programs and they're both going after the same quarterback.
Yeah, exactly, man. You know, it makes doing interviews pretty easy. I can just, you know, knock out two stories in one interview. So
that's got to be great. Now, are you headed anywhere this weekend? Are you gonna be at the Rivals camp?
Yeah. Possibly. I need to see what the roster is going to be at our Rivals camp in Columbus to make sure it's going to be worth my while to go up there. But I know Saturday I'm going up to a 7-on-7 tournament in Columbus, Indiana. It's going to be a lot of the Indianapolis type kids will be there. I know. Vanderbilt commit Joel DeCourcy is going to be there. So that's kind of like the main reason I'm going, just to kind of catch up with him, talk to him, grab some highlights. And I think Vanderbilt's got the running back target, Delbert Mims from Ben Davis. He's going to be up there playing with his team. So there'll probably be some other guys. I don't have rosters yet, so I couldn't tell you specifically who, but a lot of Indianapolis, Indiana talent to be up there. So, kind of a quick trip up the road for me, so I'm definitely going to go to that Saturday, and like I said, I'll possibly swing over to Columbus, Ohio, and hang out with Mr. Memphis and Mr. 7-on-7, Wilson Johnson, too.
Hey, well, Sean, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad to have you on the podcast. We'll get you back on here again soon.
Hey, buddy. Anytime, man. Appreciate the talk.
Hey, sounds good. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
You too.
Our thanks to Sean Williams for joining us on the podcast. Now, final few minutes here with Russell Johnson. We're going to break down the 2020 NBA draft starting. I'm kidding. All right. Ole Miss targets excelled at the camps in Dallas, which were, I don't know, what, about a week ago or so?
Last Sunday, yeah.
Last Sunday. Anybody, any of the Ole Miss targets emerge there?
Yeah, I mean, Dywan Black was basically the overall MVP of the entire tournament. You know, being in Dallas with that much of a talent pool, that was something that was unexpected. I mean, expecting to do well, but coming off that shoulder injury that he had suffered in the 7-on-7 tournament in Louisiana, wasn't sure, you know, how well he would do. That was the least surprising. I would say the most surprising was how well Derek Hall tested. There's been some talk about him being a tweener at the next level and not really having a set position or a, you know, like you don't want another tweener. There's been enough tweeners on the Ole Miss defense in recent years. So you want to recruit him specifically at a position, and that position Ole Miss is recruiting him as is linebacker. But he worked out as basically both on the linebacker and defensive end, and he excelled. He was invited to the opening finals as a defensive lineman, and he will be competing as well as Dywan Black. Nathan Pickering, who has been, you know, labeled a Mississippi State lean for quite some time and has a top 10 out with, you know, several other schools, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, schools all over the country. Ole Miss is on that currently, though they're not really in the mix at the moment. He excelled as well. He got in there. He got into the finals. Theo Weiss, the receiver from Allen, Tisdale's teammate, did really well. Garrett Wilson, who committed to Ohio State shortly thereafter. It was a loaded event, and it actually broke the record for most invites for the final that in an event in the history. There were 17 invites to the opening finals just from that event. Another one that Ole Miss really doesn't have a shot with, but some people think does, is Ismael Sopcich from Louisiana. I think he's from Amite. Is that how you pronounce it?
Amite.
He's going to LSU. Whatever they say, he's going to LSU.
Probably no matter what, right?
I mean, if the Orgeron thing blows up in their face, I think,
well,
Alabama.
They're going to hire a new guy anyway.
Yeah, and depending on who that guy is, you know, that class is critical both for LSU and in the state of Louisiana. As loaded as Mississippi is, and you know, I was doing some research this week, I was shocked at how low the population is in the state. I didn't know there was just,
Louisiana?
No, Mississippi.
Oh yeah.
There's like nobody here. I didn't realize that. I mean, you know, being in Ohio and being in Georgia, you know, I never really realized the population discrepancy, but that's what makes
this
class.
See how this works is there aren't big cities.
Yeah, that's true.
In the state.
There's not even streetlights on the highways.
There's Jackson. And then after that, it's smaller cities, as opposed to, say, Ohio, which has Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus.
Akron.
Yeah, Chillicothe.
Yeah, let's just name them all. But yeah, I mean, that's something that is, you know, that makes sense why people are, you know, saying this is the best class Mississippi's ever had. And then there's still some other names who were there. Hakeem Vance, the Baylor commit, worked out there in Dallas. He performed well. You know, he's switching to linebacker from being a safety and an athlete. So that's been a bit of a learning curve for him. I wouldn't be surprised to see if he kind of opened things up and decommitted from Baylor in the next couple weeks. You know, he's been getting some other offers, and he's going to have a busy camp season.
Lakota Henry. Anything there?
Lakia. Of course, you know, yeah, it's okay.
It was spelled Lakota.
And, you know, that's their spelling, not mine. Lakia is a linebacker in Kansas.
Gotcha.
Never been on a college campus. Ever.
Well, I've been on several, Lakia. I got to tell you, they're all starting to look exactly the same.
Yeah, well, he'll be visiting Ole Miss this month. I think it'll be the weekend of the 19th or somewhere around there. That's going to be a big visit for both Sumrall and for Ole Miss. Sumrall's really, really, really high on Lakia and want him to get – he would be someone else who would start when he got here. Obviously, if you're going to take a JUCO kid, you either expect him to start or sit 1 year. With him, he would come in and play right away.
We'll talk about – C-Strand asked about the summer camp circuit stuff. We'll get to that later in the month of May, if that's okay. There's no point in really getting into that now. It's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
The camp circuit stuff starts in June.
Yeah, that's when they're doing all their camps.
So we'll touch on that a little later in the month of May as we get closer to that. That is a really good question, though. It's actually worthy of an entire podcast. as opposed to just an answer or two. So we'll get to that a little later. I was asked about the University of Oklahoma fitting into the SEC. Norman's a funky town, but yeah, I still think Oklahoma as a program fits the SEC quite a bit. From Fayetteville to Norman was 3.5 hours, so it's not a terrible trip. You can fly into Oklahoma City, and from there to Norman's less than half an hour. It's pretty easy to do it. I was asked about my whether the Chicago Bears and me. I'm still thinking about it.
I was impressed by their draft. I know we're not going to go into it, but they did well.
They did. They did really well. And I like them, and it makes sense to like them. I want to adopt the team so that I can experience what every other red-blooded American male experiences in the course of the football season, which is cheering for an NFL team. I've never had one. I'm thinking about the Bears. Just adopting a NFL team and going, okay, you're mine.
I mean, that wouldn't be a bad place to start. I mean, they've completely flipped that franchise in, what, I think 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and I like Chicago.
With that, that's well documented.
And so I could cheer for the Bears. I could go see the Cubs and time it around a Bears game.
Yeah,
go
most,
see a Bears
yeah.
game.
Most people retire and, like, go to the beach. I think you're going to retire and go to Chicago.
I think I'm going to go to the beach. We talked about Devontae Dobbs.
Yeah, that's the tackle from Detroit who I'm
that's
looking
right.
forward
talked
to seeing.
Him earlier.
He'll probably get a 5-star invite while he's at this camp this weekend.
Oh, okay. Where's the 5-star thing this time?
It hasn't been announced yet.
Okay.
But I'm thinking it might be a place where you can see Ronald Acuna.
Ooh. Okay. When do the Cubs play in Atlanta?
That's a good question. We'll have that. I don't know.
Basketball recruiting. They're going to try to add another guard, maybe two guards. It's going well. I don't think they're going to do the transfer market. I know Russell wrote that earlier. He's right. So I'm hearing the same thing. I think they're still working on some guards. These transition classes are always hard. I think they're pretty pleased with the transition class that they've got so far. Top 19 targets. They just got their first commitment. We'll have more on 19 this summer as well. You'll see them turn their attention big time to 2019 here in the summertime.
But would you say that's a critical class for Kermit?
Yeah, absolutely. They would say it's a critical class. Everybody would. Yeah, and I think they'll do well with that class. They're off to a really good start. So a lot of people asking about Kermit Davis and Ole Miss basketball recruiting. We'll get to that.
In
the next couple of weeks.
Something that Kermit's doing that it doesn't seem like Andy did, or at least maybe I wasn't paying attention to it as much, is Kermit was the first offer for a 2021 guard from Callaway. And normally you didn't see Kennedy and Ole Miss in the past, you know, recruiting in-state. Those kind of guys were either just kind of given to Mississippi State or, especially in that area, at Callaway, you know, that's like Mississippi State High School basically right now.
Yeah, I have a myriad of thoughts about that. Kudos to Kermit Davis and his staff. They're on top of it with the early offers. They use social media in a way that the previous staff did not. So it's difficult for me to sit here and say with authority that they weren't in on those kind of guys. I do think, and I think Andy would admit this, I do think there's something... something to be said for a staff kind of giving up a little. And without realizing that they're giving up, just with a sense that, well, that's never worked. We never could get those kids. We shouldn't even try. There's a fatigue that kicks in. You know, you ask a girl out and she says no. You ask a girl out and she says no. You ask a girl out and she says no. It's pretty easy to go, we're going to move on to a different girl. I'm not going to keep asking this girl. And so I think there's some of that with that staff. It was time for a change. It was time for a change. Everyone around it knows it. The people who were part of the previous staff know it. It was time for a change. I'm not getting into it now. What I don't understand is the hindsight, not everybody, it's a minority, But that minority that looks back on the Andy Kennedy era and beats him up, I don't get it. He ran a pretty solid program for a dozen years and kept you pretty competitive and helped create the pavilion and the practice facility, and it got the program excited again and allowed Kermit Davis to come in and take over a program that has a chance to make a jump. So anyway, kudos to Kermit Davis. We'll get into basketball a little bit on our next Soft Verbal podcast, but that does it for today. For Russell Johnson, I'm Neil McCready. Our thanks to Sean Williams for his time today on the podcast. We'll be back soon with another edition of the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Until that time, take care.